Your kidneys work for you every minute of every day, quietly filtering your blood, balancing your body, keeping you alive. Most of us never think about them until something goes wrong. This March is Kidney Health Month in Canada, a time to meet your mighty kidneys and take them seriously. Millions are living with kidney disease, often without symptoms, but simple steps like testing, awareness, and healthy choices can protect your kidney health and your future. Learn the signs, know your risk, and take action today. Visit uhn.ca to learn more. Your kidneys are mighty. Take care of them. Welcome to the Living Transplant Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of the Ajmira Transplant Center at Toronto General Hospital, Canada's largest and most comprehensive transplant program, performing over 700 transplants annually. I'm your host, Candace. Each episode, we share the powerful stories from transplant recipients and living donors, along with insights and education from leading medical professionals. Today, we're going behind the scenes of the Living Kidney Donation Program with someone who walks alongside donors every single day. My guest is Melinda, one of our living donor kidney coordinators. From that very first, how do I start, to the moment a donor is cleared for surgery, Melinda helps guide people through one of the most generous decisions a person can make. In this episode, we talk about what the donor journey really looks like, the biggest myths Melinda hears, and the emotional realities that donors face. If you've ever wondered what it takes to become a living donor or what happens behind the scenes, this conversation is for you. Please enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the Living Transplant Podcast. I am thrilled today to have Melinda here with me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited.
This is so amazing to have you here because we talk over email a lot. You know, we discuss a lot of things within the kidney program, but I don't get enough time to actually sit down and talk to you and learn more about you. So I'm really excited to do that today. So I'm just going to jump right in. Melinda is one of our living donor kidney coordinators here, and I'm really interested in knowing, how did your path take you here?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I did a Bachelor of Science at McMaster University. And at that time, I was a bit unsure about what I wanted to do. I don't have any family in medicine. So choosing to go into nursing really came from a place of wanting to work with people, to be able to feel like I'm possibly contributing to people's lives in a positive way. So I went into nursing that way. And near the end of nursing school, when you have to complete a more detailed practicum and spend some time in a particular healthcare setting, there was an opportunity to apply to transplant and do that on the multi-organ transplant unit at Toronto General. I also had a very close friend at the end of high school, receive a heart transplant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I just remember going through that with him and thinking, like, this place is incredible. So that kind of stuck with me. So when there was the opportunity to do part of my nursing school with the transplant unit, I was really eager to jump at it. I felt really, really grateful to be selected for that program. And I really stayed with transplant in my nursing career thereafter. So I worked on the transplant inpatient unit for about 4 years. And from there, I jumped over to the outpatient transplant unit, working with the Living Kidney Donation Program.
Amazing. That's quite the journey. And, you know, often I will hear from people who get involved in medicine that either their family members are in medicine or they have some kind of, you know, personal connection that has brought them there. And so, you know, getting to give back to that community that has done something positive for a friend of yours, that's really cool.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. It was quite a full circle moment for me. Mm. And felt important, which was really essential to me. So
amazing. And I always say a caveat before I ask this question that, you know, there might not be a normal day in the work that you do. But if we were to take a peek into your daily life as a kidney donor coordinator, what would that day-to-day kind of look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. it's very different every day. And we kind of have to go into each day with a certain amount of planning and structure, but enough flexibility to pivot where needed and to start doing those, really high priority things sort of in a moment's notice. So we're doing everything from, evaluating patients and organizing their testing right over to preparing patients for surgery and making sure that that planned surgery can go ahead, in the safest way possible. Right over to working in the kidney pair donation program and the other transplant centers across the country, which span different time zones. So each day is a little bit different and requires a great amount of flexibility and adaptability. So it has a lot to do always with working with the patients. It has a lot to do with working with the medical team as a whole, both at our hospital and at other hospitals. And it really requires a certain amount of dedication to just jump in wherever you're needed and help wherever you're needed.
Wow, that's amazing. Having to be quick on your feet and flexible. That's incredible.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So you deal very closely with our amazing living kidney donors. I get to chat with them at different points in the process. Sometimes we'll get questions that will come to the center, and they'll be very early on. Like I saw an ad on Facebook about living kidney donation, or I saw one of the videos from Great Actions, and a friend of mine mentioned this. How do I start this process? Or maybe they come to one of our webinars to learn about it. And they'll ask different questions about kidney donation. I'm wondering if you can walk us through, a very high level overview of kind of what the process looks like for living donors when they, first ask, how do I get this started, to that actual act of donation?
Yeah, absolutely. So our evaluation process starts with the submission of our health questionnaire. So that's a 13-page document that is really a snapshot of that person's health and how they're doing and their health history. Donors come forward by submitting that health questionnaire. That's our signal that this person is interested and would like to interact with our program. So it's very much a self-referral process in that way. We don't need a referral from their family doctor. They can approach our program directly. We use that health questionnaire to screen for any possible what we call absolute contraindications. So things that may be present in that person's health that just makes donation unsafe for them right away. We know that. We're also screening it for possible contraindications. So things that might be a signal that this may be a bit unsafe for that person, but we'd like to do further testing. So it gives us a sense of that person's suitability. It certainly isn't the whole picture of that person at all, but it's just a sense of suitability, and importantly, a sign that they're interested in living donation, like to interact with us.
Right.
Once we select a donor to proceed with the evaluation, we follow a phased approach. So we complete the evaluation in different phases, with our medical team reviewing the results of the testing after each phase to determine if that person is suitable to move on to the next phase. That first phase of testing we do at Life Labs. So the potential donor will receive requisitions to do that testing at their leisure when they're ready to. Quite a lot of blood and urine testing, including a 24-hour urine collection, which we hear about a lot as every least favorite test.
Yes.
But it is very important. It gives us many indicators of that person's kidney function and their kidney health. From there, we go to phase two, which is where we do the compatibility testing, which is extremely important. It's blood work that's done at our hospital in our HLA lab, so a very specialized lab. We also do imaging at that time. It might be a chest x-ray, CT scan, stress echocardiogram, a renal scan. So really any imaging that we need to fully assess this person. We then go on to phase three of the evaluation, and that's when we get to meet and spend some time with them as the coordinators. We have lots of testing results at our fingertips, so there's quite a bit to review with them. Many people at that stage want to know what's next, so we can talk to them in detail about that. They'll meet with our social worker and then finally with our donor nephrologist. And our donor nephrologists are also transplant nephrologists, so they wear both hats in that way. They know transplant very, very well, and they have some additional knowledge and training around donation. If they're found suitable and we're going ahead with surgery, we always approach the donor to select a surgery date first. We sort of give them the first right of picking what might be the best for them in terms of timing. We do preoperative testing about 2 weeks before the surgery, and they'll have the opportunity to meet with their surgeon at that time. And then we admit them for surgery on the day of surgery, and they will be in hospital for 3 days.
That's so exciting. I know I've met some people who have said, that the day of the surgery is exciting, but they always find that the actual call or the notification that they've been approved is just one of the most joyful and exciting days of their life. Do you get to make that call sometimes?
Yes, I do. We do. So the way we've structured our evaluation process is that hopefully when they're meeting with the donor nephrologist right at the end there, that donor nephrologist has all the information that they need to make a decision right there and speak to the potential donor about that at that time, which we think is great. I think it's great to go through this big evaluation and then have the opportunity to have a physician share that news with you and be able to answer questions that you might have, whether it's good news and you're cleared or, news that unfortunately this is unsafe for you. It gives them an opportunity to ask questions. When I do get to inform them, I do very much enjoy it. People are very excited for that news, very relieved. By and large, it's a very good experience.
Speaking for myself and a lot of recipients that I've talked to, when we see donors go through this process, I find that often they are less fearful than the actual loved one getting the transplant. Like I've found so many donors are just, I've got to get through this testing. I'm doing this for my loved one. Or even if they're a non-directed donor, like I'm doing this because I want to help somebody else's family. And then us recipients are often really scared, like what's going to happen to my loved one? Are they going to be safe through this process? And I think there's a lot of myths and fears around living donation. What are some of those that you have heard or that, come up to the surface often when you're dealing with living kidney donors?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. And I always love fielding those questions and being able to give those patients some accurate information so that they make their decisions on that accurate information. A really common one within kidney donation is, will I be able to do everything that I do now after my kidney donation? And a lot of people are talking specifically about maybe activities or sports that they enjoy now and important to them. Some might be referring to being able to take care of their, young, busy family and chase after their children. So it's a really valid question. And I always love to be able to tell them that, after the recovery period, so after a 6-week recovery period where they will have physical restrictions, there's no reason why they can't ease back into all of the activities that they enjoyed prior to donation. Mm-hmm. And our donors are able to go back to doing those things. Some activities require a bit of a longer recovery period, understandably so. I'm thinking some of my donors I've worked with that love hockey or horseback riding.
Right.
We ask them for to wait a little bit longer before they get back to those things, but certainly they get back to doing them and enjoying them, and donating their kidney has not impacted their ability to enjoy that. A few others that we get are, you know, will I have to follow a kidney failure diet, limit fluids, et cetera, that they've maybe seen their family member doing. And that's not the case. So their one remaining kidney allows them to eat a fulsome diet, consume, you know, good amount of fluids. There's no restrictions in that way. And a lot of people feel very relieved to hear that. And then sort of another one that stands out in my mind is that they think a family member is the best to donate to them. So based on compatibility, they're thinking that a family member would be best, and they don't really explore their friend group or their community group. And, you know, that it's just not the case. You know, anybody could be a donor for someone as long as they're compatible. And, you know, we really say reach out to your whole support network. It doesn't just have to be a family member.
And you mentioned that compatibility. Some people we know have really amazing donors who could donate, but they're not compatible with their recipient. You talked a little bit about dealing with the kidney paired donation program. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and why it's so important and so impactful and incredible that we have this in Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the kidney paired donation program. It used to be very much my portfolio within the Living Donor Program, but we've made a few changes. It's shared among everybody now, so it's very near and dear to my heart. But the kidney paired donation program is so important because it offers the opportunity to those pairs who are incompatible with each other. It offers them the opportunity to still donate, for the recipient to still receive a living donor kidney transplant and all of the benefits that it offers. But in doing so, they're also able to help other people in a similar situation. So sort of in a nutshell, what the program does is if two people are incompatible with each other, they can enter that program, and it will look for other individuals within Canada in a similar situation that are compatible with them. So instead of you directly donating to your loved one or your friend who you would like to help, you're donating to somebody who you are compatible with, while at the same time, a compatible donor is matched to your intended recipient or the person that you would like to directly help. So I always like to say it's achieving the same outcome, which is a living donor kidney transplant and donation, but through a slightly different route, which can certainly offer complexities to the situation. But for many people, it's their only option for a living kidney transplant. And in that way, it's expanding access to living donor kidney transplant and is so important.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that I found interesting was when a donor donates their kidney into the paired donation program, they no longer have to go to the recipient. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. That's a really interesting component to the program. So as you'd alluded to, it's a national program. So all of the transplant centers across Canada are participating. And what we now do is allow our donors to donate at the center they're most familiar with. So here at Toronto General Hospital, our donors will have their surgery here, and we will ship their kidney to the center where the recipient is located that they have matched with. And similarly, for their recipient, they will get to receive their transplant at Toronto General Hospital, and we will ship in a kidney from another center that is compatible with them and complete the transplant at Toronto General. So it allows everybody to stay closer to home, to stay closer to their support system and the medical team that they're familiar with. And it still offers all of the benefits of a living donor kidney transplant, even through shipping the kidney.
Amazing. And how does it work when you have a non-directed, or I guess some people would have called them anonymous donors, who just want to donate to anyone who needs a kidney? What do you do with those living donors?
Yeah, so our anonymous, non-directed living donors are very special. And, you know, the evaluation process is the same for them. We offer them all of the options for their donation, how they would like to proceed with their donation. There's a great benefit if they choose to donate through the kidney paired donation program. So as I described, many of the people in the kidney paired donation program are entering it with an intended recipient. When an anonymous donor enters that program, it's really an influx of a kidney. They're not entering with an intended recipient. So what it allows us to do is initiate a chain of transplants with their donation. We will help many people through that chain of transplants. And at the end of it, there is a, you know, quote unquote, spare kidney because they've entered without an intended recipient. And what that allows us to do is allocate that kidney to the wait list and also help somebody on the wait list. And so many of our anonymous donors enjoy donating in this way, or they like the idea of this, because through their donation, they're not only helping the person that they end up donating to, they're helping this all of the individuals in this chain of transplants, as well as somebody on the wait list. So it's sort of a way to amplify their donation or make it greater, which is really appealing to some of them. You know, the other side of that, though, is, you know, some people say, I've really thought about this for a long time, and I would just like to help somebody off the wait list. And that's the route I want to take. And that's incredible as well. And we work to fulfill their wishes in that way, whatever they would like to do, once we have provided them with information about all of their options.
Okay. And do you ever have children who participate in the kidney paired donation program? That was a question that I had the other day from someone.
Yeah, so we have children who might be recipients within the paired exchange program. Of course, we wouldn't have children as donors. Our donors have to be above the age of 18. But definitely the children's hospitals do enter children into the paired exchange program. At Toronto General Hospital, we have a partnership with SickKids. So we do all of the potential living donors for intended recipients at SickKids. So if that donor and the pediatric recipient are incompatible, we would certainly look to entering them into the paired exchange program. And they do quite well in the paired exchange program as a pediatric recipient, receiving some priority in that way.
Right. And is there anything unique about donating when the recipient is a child, or is it very similar to having an adult donor to recipient?
Yeah, there's complexities with pediatric recipients in the sense that the recipient is evaluated by a pediatric program. So for us at Toronto General, that would be SickKids. And so those two teams, our two teams, have to be in very close contact. It's a lot of collaboration to make sure that, you know, we're on the same page with this pair. It can be quite complex for the families. And so when you have the situation of a child requiring a transplant, and maybe you're evaluating one of their parents as the potential donor, which is very often the case, that can be a very challenging situation, particularly for the donor, because they're at Toronto General Hospital having major surgery and recovering, while their child is across the street at SickKids having very major surgery and recovering. Right. As well. So to allow that person or promote some type of connection with their child as they're going through that is a little bit difficult because they're feeling under the weather themselves. But mm-hmm. I do find our parents who are donors quite incredible in what they are willing and wanting to do very soon after their donation. And that is usually to, have a friend or family member help them over to SickKids as soon as possible to see their child. So it's very possible. We do a lot of living donation for SickKids. There's always that sort of family complexity and trying to provide family-centered care between two medical teams that, an important challenge. It's a challenge, but it's very important for us to engage in.
Right. Amazing. And you talked a little bit about, those complexities and challenges. And I'm wondering, how the team supports not just the physical support for a living donor, but this can be, like you said, a really scary thing that people are going through. They're hoping that they're the one to help out their family member, and that can hold a lot of anxiety, a lot of grief, a lot of challenges that way. Sometimes anger I hear from donors as well, that especially when they're not compatible or they're not able to donate. How does the team support people through that emotional process as well as that workup physically?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good question. I think a lot of the donors go through quite the span of emotions actually in the process. So I will say, and what I think is helpful to a lot of our donors is that they have very close contact with our team. So they can contact myself or Lauren, who are the coordinators, really at any time. And I find being available to them, being able to answer their questions or just say, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can find out the answer for you. And creating a connection in that way, a supportive connection, I believe is very helpful to them. They also have, through our program, access to our physicians, which are, highly knowledgeable, very specialized physicians that, are there to help answer their questions, to support them in making whatever decision is best for them, even if that is, this isn't right for me at this time, based on what you've shared. We also have our social work team, which all of our donors will meet with. And I find that to be a very good opportunity for some of the donors to work through some of those feelings they're having at that time. And then, of course, some donors find it, incredibly helpful to be connected to the Center for Living Organ Donation and have the opportunity to talk to somebody who has gone through this before. And I think that's really invaluable for some people, is to not only have connection with the medical team, but also to have connection with someone who they really identify with as, going through the same thing as them.
I mean, there's so much that kind of goes on with all of these donors and recipients and the pairs and, hearing about their challenges and, how donors fight so hard. I was just talking to a woman who was really nervous because she had like zero instances with healthcare, really. Like, she had never had her tonsils removed. She'd never had her wisdom teeth removed. Like, even these smaller things she had never had done. And she said, this is the first time that I'm really encountering the healthcare system because I'm a really healthy person. And she said, I know that that's good going in because hopefully that means I'll be a donor. But, that white coat anxiety she expressed was interesting because our donors are coming in as really healthy people. And some of them have never had even a minor surgery or anything like that. So it must be pretty overwhelming to think about all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is absolutely something they talk about and express and have to work through themselves. I've had donors say to me, I know I need to do all this testing and I know you guys need the results to make an informed decision about my suitability. But they're almost saying to me, but I don't want to know, you know, like some of them don't want to know if there's something potentially wrong with them. They would prefer to continue to move through life, you know, feeling healthy and feeling fine. And wait to see what happens. And I always find that to be a unique perspective as someone working in healthcare and so comfortable in it. And I think sometimes we need those people to check us, right? And to say, like, not everybody is as comfortable in this setting as we are. And those people need some extra support. And I find also those donors might need a bit more support with navigating the healthcare system, which is much harder than I think it should be. But that's really what Lauren and I, the coordinators, are here for, is to help navigate that because it can be very overwhelming.
Yeah. And you know, thinking about that, we know that there are some challenges, whether it's, you know, navigating the healthcare system or barriers to accessing things. You know, people may not have a family doctor or, you know, may not know where to go for all of these different places. Can you talk a little bit about some of those challenges that you see our donors facing and barriers to living donation?
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely exist despite, you know, a lot of effort to reduce those barriers or acknowledge them and find a way to reduce them. But, you know, I always think about the financial cost to donors. Unfortunately, we are not yet at a place where this is, you know, a net zero cost to donors. It just isn't. We have a lot of resources available to them through the pre-LOD program, so Program for Reimbursing Living Organ Donors Expenses, which is offered through Ontario Health.
Amazing. You know, we talk a lot about increasing awareness, and from your opinion, in the system, you know, meeting these donors either as non-directed anonymous donors or donating to somebody that they love, how can the public best understand more about living donation? How can they support the work that's being done with living donation? And how can the public get more engaged, in your opinion, whether as donors or just, you know, helping the people who need transplants in some way or another?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very good question. And I think, like, along the lines of that question, I think it's interesting how many people that you can talk to and transplant has kind of touched their life. And how many people have experienced that. And it's always, you know, to share what I do with people and everybody pull out of their pocket a story about transplant is very interesting to me. So I think the public, you know, having interest in transplantation, engaging in transplantation, whether that is through, you know, conversations at your church, through social media. Social media is so big now in a way to share and spread stories. And I think storytelling is such a powerful way to, you know, help people understand the lives of other people and the challenges that others are going through and how that impacts the community, right? So I think just by being interested and being engaged, not everybody wants to be a living donor, and that is completely understandable. But, you know, it's so touching when you hear of donors saying, you know, I live alone, but my neighbor's willing to be there if I do need anything in recovery. And I trust them immensely, and they'll do that for me. So, you know, that neighbor is not necessarily being a donor, but they're touching the world of living donation and transplant in a very big way by helping this person who has proceeded as a donor. So, you know, I think it all goes back to kind of like that idea of community, right? Like none of us are alone in this world. We interact with each other all the time, and we're better for it. So I think the public, just by engaging, being aware, receiving storytelling, engaging in storytelling, make transplant something that is, you know, top of mind for everybody. Is a way to do that.
Amazing. And then my last question for you is, if there was somebody listening to this podcast who was contemplating being a living donor, what would you want to tell them as a coordinator?
Yeah. Well, what I would tell them is, you know, you don't have to know right away when you submit the health questionnaire that you want to do this. I often say to the donors, the evaluation process is just as much an exploration time for them as it is for us, the medical team. So I think sometimes people put a lot of pressure on themselves to know that they want to be a living donor before even submitting that health questionnaire. And I would say to them that they don't need to know that for sure yet. They can come forward, they can talk to our team, they can ask questions, they can be connected with a prior living donor, and they can use the evaluation process as a way to decide if they want to do this. They're going to learn a lot about themselves personally and their health through doing the evaluation process, and maybe they need that extra information to make a decision that sits well with them. So I would say, if you have any interest in it at all, if you just want to talk about it, if you want to get the process started and see where it goes, to just come forward and we would be happy to talk to them.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with us today and for all of your incredible information and knowledge. It's really interesting to get a little peek behind the scenes of what happens in that donor coordinator office with you guys. So thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Candace. It's something I enjoy talking about. So thank you for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Living Transplant Podcast. If you did, please rate, leave us a review, and share with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Living Transplant wherever you're listening today. If you have any ideas for podcast episodes, please reach out to us at livingorgandonation@uhn.ca. For information about living organ donation, you can visit us at www.livingorgandonation.ca. Special thanks to Bespoke Productions for editing this episode and for production support. I'm your host, Candace Coughlin. Thanks for spending your time with us.